The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are diving into a book that really shook things up. Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Feck.
Oh yeah, it's got that provocative title, definitely catches your eye. But underneath all that, it's actually this really smart mix of like Stoic ideas and Buddhist thinking about living a good life.
Exactly. And our goal today is pretty clear. We want to pull out that practical, down-to-earth wisdom. You know, if you're feeling kind of burnt out by all the pressure to be perfect, always happy, optimizing everything.
Which so many people are.
Right. Then this deep dive is probably for you. We're looking for something that, well, accepts that life is messy.
And that's why it hits such a nerve, I think. We're kind of drowning in this culture of like relentless positivity, almost toxic positivity.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We're told constantly, be amazing, be special. And it just leads to feeling overwhelmed, inadequate. Manson's book is sort of an antidote to that. It speaks right to that modern thing, the paradox of choice. Too many options, too much pressure, just makes us miserable.
Okay, so let's talk about the author, Mark Manson. He's not your typical self-help writer, is he? More of a blogger, entrepreneur, famous for being blunt, maybe a bit profane.
Totally. And that's actually key to why people listen to him. He's not claiming to be, you know, a PhD therapist.
Right.
He positions himself as a really sharp observer of culture and a synthesizer. He takes these big, sometimes complex ideas, stoicism, existentialism, a bit of psychology, and he translates them, makes them practical, usable for, well, us.
So it's less about credentials and more about authenticity.
Yeah.
Just making sense of things.
Exactly. He uses his own life, his own mistakes as examples. It feels genuine. He set himself up as the opposite of those super polished, always smiling gurus.
Yeah, you get that feeling. Like he's saying, look, life involves suffering. Let's not pretend it doesn't. Let's just figure out how to deal with it better.
That's the core message, really.
Which brings us to the main point of the book. If you strip away the title, the shock value, what's the big idea?
The central thing is this. A good life isn't about avoiding pain or always feeling happy. It's about choosing your struggles, like consciously deciding what problems are worth solving for you, where you're going to invest your limited energy, your fricks, as he puts it.
So it's not about apathy, about not caring about anything. It's about selective caring.
Precisely. It's okay to be different. It's okay to not care about shallow stuff.
Yeah.
You save that mental energy for what truly matters to you, what aligns with your values.
And who's this really for? He seems to be talking to millennials, Gen X, maybe people who followed the rules, maybe got the success, but still feel empty.
Yeah, I think that's the sweet spot. People who feel let down by conventional advice. The book is almost like a philosophical manual for judging where to put your emotional effort.
So the journey through the book is about tearing down old ideas about happiness first.
Mm. First, dismantle the myths. Then explore how your values actually shape everything you experience. And then he gives you a kind of framework for self-awareness, for accepting limitations.
A philosophical guide disguised as self-help. I like that.
It fits, doesn't it? It tackles the why, the cultural problem and the how, the actual philosophy you can apply.
Okay, let's get into the chapters. Chapter one, Don't Try. That title alone is designed to grab you, right? It introduces this kind of weird idea he calls the backwards law.
Yeah, the backwards law is, it messes with your head a bit.
Yeah.
It basically says, chasing a positive experience. That chase itself makes you feel bad.
How so?
Well, if you're desperately trying to be happy, you're constantly aware of the fact that you're not happy right now. It creates this underlying anxiety.
Okay, I get that. And the flip side is?
The flip side is that accepting a negative experience, just letting it be without fighting it, is actually paradoxically, a positive experience. There's relief in that acceptance.
He uses Charles Bukowski as an example, right? The writer.
Yeah, Bukowski. His whole thing, his epitaph even, was don't try. His success came from just being brutally honest about his messy life, his flaws. He wasn't trying to be some perfect version of himself. It's about rejecting that fake perfection.
Okay, so if flaws are okay, then problems are too. Which leads to chapter two, happiness is a problem.
Right. Problems never actually go away. You solve one, another one pops up, you pay off your student loans. Great. Mm-hmm. Now you've got the problem of saving for a house or retirement or whatever.
So happiness isn't some finish line you cross.
No. It's more like a side effect, a byproduct of solving good problems, problems that align with your values.
He has that funny character, Disappointment Panda.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The panda who tells you harsh truths you need to hear It highlights that pain and negative feedback aren't just bad. They're necessary for growth. So the question isn't, how do I get happy? It's more like, what pain am I willing to put up with? Which problems are worth the struggle?
That's a big shift in thinking.
It really is. But what stops us from picking good problems? Often it's our ego, our unrealistic expectations. Which takes us to chapter 3. You are not special. Ouch.
Yeah, that one stings a bit, especially today with social media constantly pushing us to be extraordinary. It feels almost rebellious to just say, I'm average.
It does. But Manson argues that's where real freedom is. If you accept you're average at most things, you can stop trying to be amazing at everything and focus your energy where it counts. Real self-esteem, he says, comes from an honest look at yourself, not from feeling entitled to greatness.
Okay, so if we accept we're not inherently special, how do we figure out which problems are worth tackling? That seems to come down to our values, which is chapter 4, the value of suffering.
Exactly. He uses this metaphor of the self-awareness onion. You peel back the layers, your actions, your emotions, and at the very core, that's your values. Those values set the rules, the metrics you use to judge yourself, and everything else.
And he makes a distinction between good and bad values.
A crucial one. Good values are internal, controllable, based in reality. Things like honesty, curiosity, growth. Bad values are usually external. You can't control them, often superficial. Like needing everyone to like you or being the richest or always being right.
The example he uses is Dave Mustaine from Megadeth, right? Kicked out of Metallica.
Yeah, perfect example. Mustaine achieved huge success with Megadeth, objectively. But he apparently spent years feeling like a failure because his core metric was still based on comparing himself to Metallica, on getting revenge. His values were kind of messed up, so the external success didn't fix the internal problem.
Wow. So bad values lead to bad problems no matter how much you achieve?
Pretty much. And if your values determine your metrics, that leads into chapter 5. You are always choosing. This chapter really drills down on the difference between fault and responsibility.
I found this really powerful. Fault is about the past, like who caused something.
Right.
But responsibility is always now, how you choose to respond.
Exactly. Mm-mm. You might not be at fault for, say, losing your job or getting sick, but you are always responsible for how you interpret it, how you react to it. It sounds harsh, maybe, but it's actually incredibly empowering. It puts you back in the driver's seat. He mentions William James, the psychologist, who basically decided to act as if he had free will and responsibility during a deep depression, and it changed everything for him.
But taking responsibility means you might have to admit you were wrong or that your beliefs aren't working. That's hard. Which I guess is why chapter 6 is called You're Wrong About Everything.
Huh. Yeah, it's about intellectual humility. You can't grow if you're convinced you already know everything. Certainty feels safe, but it's actually a trap. It stops growth.
He has Manson's law of avoidance here too, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. The more something threatens your identity, the more you will avoid it. Mm. It explains why we cling to beliefs even when evidence contradicts them. The example of Hiro Onoda is wild.
The Japanese soldier who kept fighting WWII for decades after it ended.
Yeah, because his entire identity was wrapped up in the war still being on. Admitting he was wrong meant dismantling his whole sense of self. It shows the danger of being too certain.
So we need doubt. And we also need to be okay with failing. Chapter 7, failure is the way forward.
Absolutely. Failure isn't the opposite of success. It's part of the process. It's just feedback, data.
And this is where the do something principle comes in, which I found super practical. It flips the usual motivation advice.
Totally. Most people think, first I need motivation, then I'll act. Manson says, nope, it's the other way around. Action comes first.
Action, inspiration, motivation.
Exactly. Just do something, anything, a tiny step. That action generates a bit of inspiration, which then fuels motivation, which leads to more action. Don't wait to feel like it. Just start.
Love that. And then finally, to keep doing the important stuff, chapter 8 is the importance of saying no. Boundaries.
Yes. If you want to really commit to something worthwhile, a value, a relationship, a project, you have to reject the alternatives. You can't do everything. Saying no to distractions, to things that don't align, even to unhealthy demands from others, that's what protects your energy for what truly matters. It's freedom, actually.
Okay, so pulling it all together, what are the absolute core themes we should take away? First, definitely that rejection of toxic positivity.
Yeah. Accepting that negative emotions are normal, even useful, stops that horrible feedback loop from hell. Feeling bad about feeling bad. It builds resilience just to acknowledge, okay, I feel anxious right now, without judging it.
And second, the whole idea of values-based decision-making. understanding what you actually value, not what society tells you to value, changes the game. It helps you choose better problems.
It forces you to ask, are the things I'm stressing about actually worth the struggle? Do they align with my good internal values?
Which connects to the third big one, radical responsibility. Moving away from blaming circumstances or others, the fault thing, and towards owning your response.
It's about agency. Even in terrible situations, you still control your interpretation and your next step. That's powerful.
And lastly, maybe the toughest one, embracing the necessity of suffering.
Right. Not pointless suffering, but meaningful struggle. Suffering in service of something you chose, something you value. That's where fulfillment actually comes from. Not from avoiding difficulty, right, but from choosing the right difficulties.
Stop fighting the fact that life is hard and instead choose your hard.
That's it perfectly.
The book is full of lines that just stick in your head. We should share a few. That core paradox first.
The desire for more positive experience is itself a negative experience. And paradoxically, the acceptance of one's negative experience is itself a positive experience. That one really makes you stop and think, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I like the blunt reminder about focus. You and everyone you know are going to be dead soon. You have a limited amount of frecks to give, very few, in fact. It really cuts through the noise.
It does. And this one redefines identity. Who you are is defined by what you're willing to struggle for. It's not about your dreams. It's about the hard stuff you actually commit to enduring.
My personal favorite reframes pain. The problem isn't that we don't know how not to get punched in the face. The problem is that we don't know how to make getting punched in the face feel good, finding meaning in the struggle.
So good. Okay, so how does this actually play out? Like real life applications for relationships, maybe?
Yeah, using that saying no idea, setting real boundaries, focusing energy on relationships built on shared, genuine values rather than just trying to please everyone or avoid conflict, more authenticity.
Right. Yeah. In your career, you could use the values test. Are you chasing status and money, kind of shaky external values? Or are you looking for roles with meaningful challenges, opportunities for growth, the good internal stuff? It changes how you even define success at work.
Totally. And for just general mental health. Understanding that feedback loop from hell, when difficult feelings come up, anxiety, sadness, whatever, just noticing them, observing them without piling on extra judgment, like, oh no, I shouldn't feel this way.
Just letting them be. That acceptance alone can take away so much of the secondary suffering. It builds that emotional muscle.
For me, the most surprising part was maybe the last chapter, and then you die.
Uh-huh.
Sounds grim, but thinking about mortality, it's actually kind of liberating.
It really is. It's the ultimate filter for what matters. When you really confront that finitude, all the small, trivial anxieties tend to fall away. It forces you to prioritize.
Yeah, it clarifies things incredibly well.
It's the ultimate perspective shift. The big takeaway for me is that freedom isn't about having zero problems. It's about consciously choosing which problems you want, which struggles are meaningful to you, aligning what you do with what you truly value. That's how you find meaning, right in the middle of all the inevitable messiness of being human.
It's not about finding the meaning of life, but finding meaning in your life's struggles. Deep stuff, but also really practical.
Agreed. A really worthwhile deep dive. Needed that dose of reality.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.